It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Thank you, Dave Wilson. We want to bring in Matt Mosler from our ACE Federal Reserve reporting team. And I want to set this up for you, Matt, as you've had a chance now to take a couple minutes and read our story on the Bloomberg and maybe even scan a bit of the minutes yourself, that we've had dueling comments from top Fed officials the last couple of days, because John Williams from the San Francisco Fed said a rate hike could still be appropriate this year, depending on how the economy plays out, depending on his expectation that there'll be no impact on the U.S. from Brexit, versus Dan Tarullo. He said, regardless of Brexit, you don't have employment and inflation at a point where it's time to raise rates. It seems to me there's still maybe two camps there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think one thing that both of them would agree on, and many others on the committee, is this idea that the neutral Fed funds rate, where they're eventually going, is lower. And there's a lot of uncertainty around that. And one of the lines here that really jumps out at me is several noted that in the prevailing circumstances of considerable uncertainty about the neutral federal funds rate, the committee could better gauge the effects of increases in the federal funds rate on the economy if it proceeded gradually in adjusting policy. So this, to me, suggests that, you know, the pace of rate hikes is going to be very slow, because not only do they have so much uncertainty about this, but they don't know how each rate hike is going to impact the economy, and that's going to call for additional time between increases to gauge the effects. And that's exactly what we're seeing so far this year, and here we are, 7 months later, and we've only hiked once. So,
wondering if you could just comment a little bit about Loretta Mester, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, because I believe that there's a bit of a surprise that Mester didn't dissent in the meeting, favoring a more hawkish stance. She since clarified that the Brexit concerns kept her from wanting to tighten policy.
Yeah, you know, that was interesting. And I think perhaps even more interesting was Esther George, the Kansas City Fed president, is known to be probably the most hawkish member on the committee. And she said after the June meeting that and she's been dissenting, right, at previous meetings. And the reason she didn't dissent in June was because of that jobs report. So it really goes to show you how important that bad jobs report in May was, how it scared off even the most hawkish Fed officials, and, you know, therefore how important this Friday's number is going to be to see whether or not that was real.
You know, Dave Wilson, if we look at the market expectations, so if we look at WIRP on the Bloomberg, which is the world interest rate projection, right, for key rates around the world. But if you look at the one regarding the Fed, right now the markets aren't even looking for an interest rate increase possibly all the way through next year. So I just wonder especially if I'm an equity investor, this is great for bonds. The global bond rally is still on fire. Yields are falling all around the world. But for stocks, can you just say no big deal? Or are you concerned that the Fed's still concerned enough about the economy and global risks that it's not moving?
Well, I mean, you have to be concerned to the extent that you figure out, well, what kind of companies do you want to invest in? I mean, you look at the last several years, and it's been about growth, because you haven't seen a whole lot of it in the U.S. economy, or certainly economies elsewhere. So you've had growth stocks, the ones that can deliver the biggest increases in sales and earnings and so on, do relatively well when you compare them with value stocks, the ones that people tend to buy because they're relatively cheap when you look at earnings or sales or asset values. It's actually chart of the day I just did on this whole idea that you've had this reversal this year where you've seen the value stocks do a bit of a rebound. Given what's happening in the economy, though, and the Fed's reluctance to raise rates, you do have to ask the question whether that equation is going to reverse again and growth stocks are going to regain prominence here. At least that's what Barry Bannister strategist over at Stifel was talking about, and it's why it showed up in my chart from yesterday.
Yeah, indeed. Also worth noting that these minutes are being released at a time that gold has reached a fresh two-year high, $1,369 an ounce. Also, that the yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury note, Kathleen, I know you've been following this, falling to its lowest level ever. That means a pretty important piece of information.
Yes.
For people who are in the bond market. And we note that, for example, the long bond, the 30-year, I think the return so far this year is over 17% in capital appreciation, as well as whatever payments you may have received.
Well, let's toss this over to Matt Bosler, because Larry Summers, an op-ed in the Washington Post today, former Treasury Secretary, who's been pounding the table on secular stagnation, you know, these long-term forces holding back economies around the world, saying, this is why the bond yields are falling. I wonder what they mean to the Fed, and I wonder, as we comb through these minutes with our fine-tooth, you know, reporter combs, if we'll see any reference to this concern over what this plunging bond yield might mean.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, because I was just looking at the appendix to the minutes that comes out once a quarter when they release their, you know, projections for the economy. And one of the things they include in the appendix is how they see the risks to their projections for inflation and unemployment weighted, you know, whether it's to the upside or to the downside. And one thing we saw in March was that a lot of people on the committee saw their risks to their inflation forecasts as weighted to the downside. So that would help explain why yields are so low. But the interesting thing, and this is something I really wasn't expecting at all, is that in June, there were a lot less members who saw a risk to inflation as weighted to the downside. So that kind of, you know, doesn't jive with the market.
I want to thank you very much, Matt Bosler, Bloomberg Federal Reserve reporter, Dave Wilson, Bloomberg Stocks columnist, to be joining us in the next hour of Taking Stock. And this is Bloomberg.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox president Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.